From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Open lines later on tonight. Here's what's happening. What a strange night for shootings. 8 people found dead in southern Ohio Friday, at least 7 of them relatives, apparently shot execution style. At least 2 babies there survived. Police discovered the remains in 4 locations, 3 of them homes along the same road in Piketon, Ohio. The 2 babies, one of them 5 days old and 6 months old, lived in one of the homes. Very strange. They're looking for the suspects now. And then breaking news tonight, 5 people have been killed in 2 shootings in northeast Georgia, according to investigators. They say the shootings are related. Columbia County Coroner Vernon Collins said 3 people were shot at 1 location in Appling. 2 of them died at the scene and a 3rd died at the hospital. He said 2 other people were shot and killed at another location about a mile away. An autopsy has now been completed on the body of 7-time Grammy winner Prince. The office stated results would not be made public until all examinations are complete and all results are obtained. Gathering the results will take several days, and the results of a full toxicology scan could likely take weeks. Prince was found dead Thursday in the elevator of his Paisley Park estate in Chanhassen, Minnesota. He was 57 years old. But TMZ, as we reported yesterday, said that Prince had OD'd on Percocet days before his death, and he ingested so much EMTs had to administer a save shot at the airport where his plane made an emergency landing to save his life. And then he was taken to the hospital. Let's check in with Dr. Peter Breggin, who, of course, is the noted author of Medication Madness. Peter, though we still have to wait for these results, I suggest, and I think it looks like drugs may have been the culprit here. What do you think?
Yeah, it sounds very much like he got addicted to oxycodone. Some of the story seems to indicate that he had a hip replacement in 2010. And, you know, watching him perform tonight, looking at his videos, he was an athlete. And, I mean, he moved those hips a lot. And I can imagine, without him having any history of addiction, that he could have got caught up in trying to maintain his athleticism, his dance ability, you know, keep going on the stage, take more and more painkillers, kind of like, you know, an NFL athlete or any athlete. And then he got addicted.
How does the drug, Peter, how does the drug kill you? What does it do to the body?
Well, first, some people may be confused because this is not OxyContin, which is the long-acting form of oxycodone, which addicts chew and get an overdose because they get the long acting all at once. This is a plain old morphine-like painkiller. It's a little stronger per milligram than morphine. It's a little weaker than hydrocodone. And what it does is it causes addiction. It causes you to want more and more, and then to experience a lot of withdrawal if you don't get enough. And when you take too much, it basically suppresses your brain, suppresses the central nervous system, and in particular the respiratory centers, so a person literally stops breathing. You literally need assistance to breathe. And it sounds like on the airplane, he actually did stop breathing. And that's why they made this a very emergency stop. And then you can reverse it with Narcan, which is competes for the same same receptors in the brain, and you can very quickly get a temporary recovery. So I think he's going to turn out that he got addicted, from the physical stuff, and then of course all the struggles with fame and fortune and isolation that so many of these famous people go through.
Peter, let's stay in touch. If we get the results next week, let's get you back on and react to that, whatever it might be. Suicide in the United States has surged to the highest levels in nearly 30 years. A federal data analysis has discovered this, with increases in every age group except older adults. The rise was particularly steep for women. It was also substantial among middle-aged Americans, sending a signal of deep anguish from a group whose suicide rates had been stable or falling since the 1950s. A satanic group is set to verse a black mass at the Oklahoma City Civic Center Music Hall in August, but 100,000 people have already signed a petition to have the gathering canceled. Conservative Roman Catholic organization called Tradition, Family, and Property has forwarded the said petition in the hopes that the satanic black mass could be stopped, just as Catholic protests have prevented a similar ritual from being carried out at a Harvard University before. The petition calls for the cancellation of the August 15th event, which is deemed as offensive to Christians all over the world. Two pilots are slowly carving their way into a future of solar-powered flight as one embarks on the latest leg of their around-the-world journey in a plane powered only by the sun. They left Hawaii. They're heading for Mountain View, California. Could take about 3 days on that stop. Let's see what happens. We'll continue to monitor that. And there was a understandable alarm in the United Kingdom earlier in the week when a drone reportedly hit a passenger plane coming in to land at London's Heathrow Airport. But after examining Sunday's events more closely, a government minister speculated that rather than a drone, the object may have been a plastic bag that somehow was flying around up there. That's weird. What else is flying around up there? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what do you have for us this week?
Plastic bags aren't the only things that are flying around us, George.
No.
Boy, we've got some doozy of really interesting reports this week. I'd like to reach back. We just got a report of an incident that occurred very near Florence, Colorado, right on the Arkansas River. Just west of Pueblo, Florence is the home of a Supermax prison, and it plays a role in this sighting. On the 4th of April, a woman went to her bedroom window to close the blinds so she could go to bed, and her attention was immediately drawn to a disc-shaped object. She estimates it was less than 400 feet above her apartment, and she got such a good look at it, she could see the lights around the flange of it, red and white lights sparkling and twinkling all the way around the flange of it. She could also see four orange lights on the bottom of it, and as it flew closer to the Supermax prison in Florence, she could see a kind of superstructure on the top of it. And her view of it was so good, George, that she could see that one of the orange lights on the ventral surface was flickering as if it were defective. So those buggers were going to fly over a Supermax prison with a defective taillight. That's pretty brazen by my measure. 9 days later, and I don't mean to pick on Colorado, but this is a really good sighting report that I was going to report last week but started running out of time and had to cut it out of the queue. Two adult males were driving north, very close to Apache City, north of Walsenburg on Interstate 25. As they drove by a field that had about seven or eight cattle in it, they saw two beach ball size objects. One was yellow, one was orange, and they were going so fast and so much traffic around them, they just kept going. But About 2 hours later, they went back the opposite direction on the other side of the interstate, and they noted that both of the objects were gone by the time they got back, but also all of the cattle were gone from the field as well. I'm not suggesting there was any kind of abduction, but I think if I were a cow and I boned up on the animal mutilation phenomenon, if I had a couple of UFOs in my pasture, I think I'd keep an eye on them myself. Well, last Saturday, Vancouver, B.C., this is a really, really interesting report. This comes to me from a young woman whom I've known, I think, for at least 20, maybe 25 years. Very, very reliable, very talented. She's a professional engineer. She's a musician, just a wonderful person. She was up in Vancouver on vacation, sitting in front of the Queen Elizabeth Theater, I believe it was, and her attention was drawn to a distant building. She saw a man walking on top of the building, probably a maintenance man, but the type of person Lexi is, she was concerned for his welfare, wondering whether he might be a jumper. And as she was watching him very carefully, hoping he was okay, she noted that there was a disc up above him and to the right, a disc-shaped craft.
Hmm.
Long story short, that craft approached that man so closely that she thought it was going to be an abduction scenario before her eyes. That report is posted to our website tonight. People might enjoy reading it. Last couple of reports, one is from last night, northeastern Arkansas, and I reported from there, I think it was a couple weeks ago, you might remember, for Corning, Arkansas. This one is from the city of Light, L-I-G-H-T, Light, Arkansas, on Highway 412. Last night, I got a late-night call from a gentleman, very eloquent, very sober-minded, the kind of witness a UFO investigator dreams about. He was driving to the east on Highway 412 when he noted a very bright, sudden flash behind his vehicle. And he looked in his rearview mirrors, and there was a very bright orb trailing his, I think he was driving a truck. He was on call at the time. And as he was trying to figure out what that bright light behind his truck was, it suddenly accelerated past his truck on the left and disappeared in the night sky, in the eastern night sky. And final report, Seattle this morning, about 30 minutes past midnight, this is less than 24 hours ago.
That's quick.
A woman was standing out on a deck with her boyfriend. They both saw a seed-shaped or triangular-shaped dark craft, no lights on it at all. And late tonight, she provided us with an illustration, which is on our homepage, ufocenter.com. So lots going on, and I'll keep you apprised of things that happen.
You're the best, Peter. You are the best. Up next, Linda Godfrey joins us. We're going to be talking about monsters and creatures and strange things on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Godfrey with us for the next couple hours. She's a researcher, investigator, a Bigfoot, Wolfman, and other cryptids for years. She is the author of a number of books, including just a few, The Beast of Bray Road, Monsters Among Us, Real Wolfman, and so many more. She's had her own field encounters, too. So welcome back, Linda Godfrey. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Looking forward to this.
Me too.
Why are there creatures everywhere?
There are, and there's so many of them. That's the weirdest thing. They're widespread, and they're various of all different types.
Let us break down these creatures and go through them in segments, if we can, and get your expertise on that. Next hour, we'll take phone calls from people with real-life stories. But
Great.
Let's talk about dogman, werewolves. Are they one and the same?
I think that they are fairly interchangeable terms, since we still, to my way of thinking, don't know exactly what they are. I don't claim to know exactly what they are, because we've never had one really to study. You know, and I think they may be different things. You know, I think there may be several different types of things that people are seeing depending on the circumstance. But they are also very widespread, I would say worldwide. You know, at least wherever dog-like or wolf-like creatures are found, at least I'll put it that way. But they're certainly all over North America, South America, and Europe. And I've even had reports from Australia and the Virgin Islands, and you know, other strange places you wouldn't expect them.
Linda, a skeptic would say, and has said on this program before, look, you don't have a Bigfoot. You don't have a werewolf, you don't have a dogman, you don't have a black cat, you don't have a chupacabra, you can't find Nessie. So you keep telling me that you've got all these creatures running around all over the planet, and not one has been discovered, not one has been captured, the bones of one has never been found. What's going on here? So how do we answer them?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, a very logical comment to make, because it's true. I mean, even with Bigfoot, which is probably arguably the most common of the cryptids that is seen. We should have more by now than we do. And, you know, I think that eventually, if you stay in this long enough, I've been investigating these creatures for 24 years, you start leaning toward alternative explanations. Not because you're desperate, but because that's where the evidence and the great preponderance of reports begins to lead you. I've noticed over the years that I started out thinking these were just some entirely natural subspecies of, perhaps a kind of timber wolf or wolf-dog hybrid that for some reason had found it expedient to adapt themselves so they could walk and run on their hind legs when they wanted to. Except, over 24 years, I haven't been able to find an expert or a woodsman or anyone who should be out observing large packs of wolves in the wild that's ever reported this behavior. And, you know, that's just one of the things that made me over time start wondering if there were other possible explanations. And my Native American friends of different nations mm-hmm. have been fairly consistent, those that I've interviewed. And they're not a monolithic culture, you know, not all Native Americans believe the same thing. I know you know that, but I always like to make that clear. But those I've talked to believe that the Dogman and the Bigfoot are both primarily what they call spirit creatures. There may be other scientific terms for it in a parallel explanation. But they believe that they come from what they call the spirit world. They come here to do whatever their own purposes are. And when they're here, they can manifest completely physically. They can have enough weight to leave big footprints. They eat. They can reproduce. They do all of these things. But when they're done with whatever their assigned mission is or their life cycle or whatever causes them to stay for a certain amount of time, they can leave and go back to the spirit world through certain portals. You know, and I noticed that you used my sketch on your website for the announcement where I'm kind of illustrating John Keel's idea of the window area where all these things are coming out of the proverbial window that represents the opening or the rip in the veil or the place, the leak between different worlds, the spirit world and our world, or our world and a world in another dimension, that sort of thing. So that's the Native American explanation.
Well, but this explanation would hold water for what? Bigfoot, werewolves, those kinds of creatures. Mm-hmm. It probably doesn't hold for everything, right? Like a chupacabra may indeed be an animal somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And, there are also, a certain number of reports are going to be hoaxes. That, to me, is just a given. A certain number of reports are going to be misidentifications of other animals.
Sure.
A certain number of reports, or for instance, a lot of the ones that people call, or to my mind, mislabel chupacabras are drowned animals that had mange, usually a raccoon or something like that, which can look really strange without its fur. It's amazing how much volume the long fur adds to the perceived form of an animal. When it doesn't have it, it looks really odd. And in death, the tissues shrink back off the teeth and the claws, making them look extra long. So, you have to rule out a certain portion of things that aren't going to pan out. And according to the reports that I have, I believe that it's really a small percentage. You know, it's not like 50% or anything. It's just, in the single digits somewhere that you can rule those out. But then there are other things that could be unexplained real animals, like those original, the chupacabras that appeared in Puerto Rico, where they were fairly consistent, and people were describing this like straw-like appendage coming out of the mouth that it could use to suck the blood, and they had distinctive scales and a dog-like head, and were fairly consistent, although there were variations.
Let's talk more about that, Linda, when we come back. Strange Creatures on Coast to Coast AM. I can't wait till we take your phone calls next hour. Questions, of course, with Linda Godfrey, but stories, too. Maybe you've seen some of these creatures. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Godfrey with us. Linda, of course, is a researcher and a noted author, and she loves the creatures and unusual. The Beast of Bray Road, of course, one of Wisconsin's werewolves. So back to some of these creatures, Linda, do you actually go searching for them yourself?
Well, I don't just strike off out into the wilderness with, you know, toting a rifle hunting these things.
Into the wilderness.
I do go out, you know, when there have been reports at a place, if it's someplace that I can get to. I take some trusted researcher friends, and we will go out and just investigate, see if we can find prints, find other people to talk to, find other indications of, that such a thing had been there. And I'll continue to do this. In fact, I spent yesterday out with some friends still researching a story that appeared in one of my first books 10 years or so ago, where a woman saw three upright canine creatures drinking using their paws to bring the water up to their mouths across from a river where she was. And when they saw her, they stood up and began wading across the river. She was with a couple of people, actually, at the time. And I went out with my friends, and we were actually in some pretty hairy places looking along that riverside. We did end up finding what possibly was a smallish Bigfoot print. It was a pretty darn good one, one of the best I've seen. But no dogmen that day. So,
one of your latest books is called American Monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at a lot of animals that are unknown to science. Is there anything supernatural about these creatures? Or are we talking about physical planetary creatures?
Well, they sort of run the gamut. There are some that just seem to be, they look no different than a giant dog or wolf, or a good big dog or wolf, usually 6 to 7 feet tall. And the only supernatural thing that most of them do is that they're running or walking, and I'm saying supernatural appearing, this is not a supernatural thing, they're running or walking on their hind legs, which any mammal can be trained or motivated to do. Some do it in the wild if they're born without their forelimbs or get them injured in their paws injured in a trap, for instance. But that's, just not a supernatural thing. But then there's a certain subset where I have people say, this thing appeared in my house, and then it suddenly disappeared. Or I've started to get more and more where people have actually seen things with a really physically human body and a physically dog-like, dog or wolf head and hands. And these often appear in certain areas, and I think may have a different origin. They're completely different behaving than the roadside canines that most people run into, or sometimes in the trails or just in odd places. The other normal types, and they're not truly, well, when I say normal, people are chuckling because no dog or wolf that runs upright on its hind legs is probably going to be considered normal, but compared to the other things. So my next book that's coming out is going to address a lot of these instances where there are somewhat supernatural or very supernatural associations with some of the reports.
The myths of the old days, where we would hear stories of man-beast-like creatures, where Pan, for example, he would have, a human torso and face, yet he had hoofs of like a lamb or something like that. Do you hear any of those anymore?
Sometimes I do, yeah. There was a fairly recent sighting 10 years ago of a wolf man in the Northern Kettle Moraine State Forest that was reported to me by a relative, actually, that had been holding back for some time and finally admitted that he and a friend of his had been driving along in this, and it's kind of a hilly, not well-lit area about a half a mile northwest of Milwaukee. And they're driving along, and this goat man runs out into, which is the closest to the, you know, the ancient pan or the satyrs, runs right out into the road, stops and looks at them. He said it was built almost like a human in terms of its shoulders. It had very thickly muscled upper arms, and it was very upright, but it had horns, very large ears, a goat-like head and face. It held its arms out in front of it, and he could see that it had hooves, you know, rather than claws or paws or human hands. But it was very human-like in its body, goat-like in the head and the paws, which, you know, and he swears they weren't drinking or hallucinating or anything like that. They both saw it, and, you know, and I have their names and everything. So these things do come up every once in a while. Once in a while, there is also a canine that's described that way, with shoulders, which normal canines don't have shoulders, with hands instead of the paws. I have a great story in the new book about a woman in Los Angeles who pulls up at an intersection and looks out her window, and there's a black stretch limo next to her car, and the window rolls down, and there's a beautiful German Shepherd looking at her, and it raises its forelimb and casually drapes it across the window, and it's a human arm with a hand.
Jeez. Okay, so maybe somebody's in a costume. Maybe?
It could be. You know, that's very possible. But she felt that it was a real dog at first. It wasn't until it, you know, it was, had its mouth open, was kind of panting a little bit. So it's just really hard to say. Some of these are very much like dogs, except for one or two incidents. I had another one that I posted on my blog just recently where a man was accosted in a cemetery in southeast London, and this huge dog-like creature knocked him over. He was taking a shortcut to go to a friend's house. Otherwise, he normally never would have been in this spot. So
right.
This thing knocks him over, is holding him pinned on the ground, and its mouth is open, its tongue is hanging out, and it's sniffing him all over like a dog. You know, like when you go somewhere and you come home and your dog smells something on you and it's sniffing your leg very closely.
Yeah.
Well, this thing was doing that to this man all up and down his body. And he said the thing was, it was pinning his arm with a hand. And he said he was quite certain he could see the hand. And, you know, a dog paw can't grasp around an entire arm. This is a different sort of a structure. And he was terrified. He was completely convinced it was going to eat him. But it finally decided, evidently, that he didn't smell good or something. And he, in fact, did suffer from a certain disease that is known to be one that can be detected by disease-sniffing dogs.
Yeah, and they're very good at that.
Exactly. And he really feels that that's what saved him, that something about his illness made the creature think that it didn't want to eat him, and it jumped up and ran off on its hind legs.
Of the creatures that you've looked at and investigated, Linda, what do you say would be the most profound? Is it the wolfman? Bigfoot, what creature could it be that really not only baffles us, but maybe scares the living daylights out of us? Or all of the above?
Well, I think that the upright canines, as I like to call them, are probably scarier than Bigfoot in most cases because they're so predatory looking and they snarl. They sneer at people. They stalk people. They're very large. They've got the claws in most cases. But I think that the Bigfoot is the most engaging and captivating one because they seem to be so much more like us. They're huge. They're unknown. Some people quibble over whether they should even be called monsters, but they have scared quite a few people. They're not all like gentle teddy bears by any means, but we look at them and we think we see a part of ourselves looking back at us. And there are many Native American tribes that insist they are people. I like to think that they could be considered people, but perhaps not humans. I think there is some difference between us and them. But they seem sentient. They seem as curious in us at us as we are of them, which is always a little scary. And actually, the upright canines are that way, too. People will always say that they feel they are being observed and stared and sussed out. And both of these animals are fairly frequently seen by people staring into their windows at their houses or invading their actual property.
These creatures, have they been known to hurt anybody?
I've heard a few other stories from other people or other researchers that I hate to say anything about because I haven't really been able to investigate them myself, but out of 24 years of correspondence, people sending me reports about these things, I've only had two instances where there was actual physical contact that either harmed or had the potential to harm. One was the one that I just told you about, and that was, I received that just very recently, although the incident happened a few years earlier. The other one was a man in Quebec, Canada, who was out on a trail, unarmed, came face-to-face with an upright dog man or wolf man, and it scared the living daylights out of him, and just as he thought it was going to jump on him and eat him, it dodged off in a slightly different direction, and he said he was so panicked, he kind of jumped the wrong way, and it ended up grazing his flank and hip with its tooth and leaving this big, jagged cut. It was superficial. He had to get stitches, but he said he told them at the hospital that it was a bear because he was sure they wouldn't believe him if he said it was an upright canine. I've had one other person who was wearing a very big loose shirt kind of billowing out behind him as he ran from the creature that was chasing him, and it raked the shirt with its claws, he claimed. I had the shirt and tried to see if I could, in my possession for a while, to see if I could get tests made on it. And there just wasn't anything really solid enough to indicate. There were three slits that could have been made by anything. So I'm not sure, if he actually was, if it was the creature that even did that.
We have had a series of shows with David Politis, who has written books about people disappearing in parks. They're just gone all of a sudden. They just vanish, disappear, and there's all kinds of theories.
Right.
And one could be that, they're stumbling into some kind of dimension or something that's out there. But what about the possibilities that some of these creatures, like a Bigfoot, like a werewolf, but trouble is nobody hears anything. And you would think that if these creatures pounce down on somebody and grab them, sometimes it's the last person that's hiking, and people turn around and he's gone. But wouldn't one of these creatures make noise when they pounce on somebody?
I would think so. I mean, both of them are known to make noise when they're stalking people through the woods. People say they can hear the snow or the ground crunching as they walk on it.
They don't seem to hide their appearance at all. I mean, they just
not unless they're for some reason remaining hidden in the woods. But the thing is, I read that Politis has concluded that the people that don't get abducted are those that have some sort of GPS unit on them and a gun.
It was very strange. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know that these creatures would make that distinction. They do seem aware of cameras, so they may be aware of other electronics and guns. I don't know, but I think there are plenty of other possible explanations. UFOs seem a little bit more likely to me. I mean, they've been observed beaming people up or, taking them in other ways. Perhaps there are unseen nature forces. I think there are all kinds of other explanations. There may even be some mundane thing that we don't know about. I don't know. I'm hoping someday he really comes out and says, he doesn't really say what he thinks they are, and I would love to hear what his...
Yeah, he will not conclude that. Right. I've tried to squeeze it out of him, but he's,
I know,
he's a great guest. I love him. And
They're great books, but, I just don't think there's any evidence to show that it would be a Bigfoot or...
I would put that down on the bottom of the list.
Right, exactly. Although, there are some Native American tribes, particularly up in the Northwest, that their traditions say that the Bigfoot were known for capturing people and running away with them and abducting them, basically. And some would come back and some would not. I've heard from one Native American person who had supposedly a great aunt, the elders told about this, or a great aunt that was abducted by Bigfoot and came back and was never quite right in her mind after that and died a short period after returning to the tribe. So it has happened, I think, in at least in Native American tradition, that Bigfoot has abducted people, but I can't see, they could carry somebody off, but I think a dog man, by the time it carried you off, you wouldn't be in any really good shape to report back.
You have another book coming out in September. What's that all about?
Yeah, that is the one. My short tagline on it is The Stranger Side of Strange Creatures.
The Stranger Side of Strange Creatures.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's kind of what we've been talking about. It's got a longer subtitle. It's called Monsters Among Us, An Investigation of Otherworldly Bigfoot, Wolfmen, Portals, Phantoms, and Odd Phenomena. And the publisher kind of came up with this title, trying to put it all together. But I was looking at all of these cases where they're associated with lights, where there are UFOs nearby or happening at the same time, where there are glowing red eyes on canines, which are supposed to have just yellow eye shine. It's a very different thing. And decided to try and see what I could put together and see if there were any associations. For instance, I started looking up solar flare conditions in any case where I could find a date that was close enough to be meaningful, and all kinds of other things, and just noting things like, another one is strange mists will occur oftentimes where there are creature sightings, and put that together and tried to make some sense out of it.
All right, Linda, we're going to make some sense out of phone calls next. Questions for you and maybe stories as well.